Appreciate a little improv from our band today. I asked them to share that with us, and you'll notice how they did that. They started out with just a basic, simple drum beat, and then they just added a layer at a time and a layer at a time, and then they reversed it back through the system. But really, that's what we're trying to do as we've been talking about rhythms the past couple months, is we've been trying to get in step with the rhythms of Jesus so that we can make a beautiful sound, so that we can make an attractive sound. And it begins with the rhythm of prayer. Remember how we started with prayer? And everything starts there. We start by cultivating this relationship with God that underlines and empowers everything else that we do as followers of Jesus. And then from that foundation beat, then we begin to add other layers. So we discovered the rhythm, the power of with. Remember that? And we talk how Jesus invited people just to do life with him, to come along with him. And we learned that by intentionally spending time with other people that we can rub off on them in some positive ways. And they too start to pick up the rhythm with us as we follow Jesus together. Next, we added the rhythm of eating together. And some of you really got into that rhythm, I know, and you like that part. But truthfully, this simple but profound act of table fellowship is so important. Barriers come down and bonds are made, and there's open sharing and eating together. And most of all, Jesus is revealed in those encounters. And then we added another layer, the rhythm of learning and teaching. A disciple is a perpetual learner. You're always learning. You're always growing. You're following Jesus, right? And as we learn from Christ, we begin to become more and more like him. That's our objective. And we do what he does. We get out there and disciple others like he showed us to do. And we teach them everything he showed us and commanded us. And then that beat becomes more and more complex and beautiful when we follow Christ's rhythm to serve. We pour out the love of Jesus for his honor, but also for the well-being of others. We're meeting needs. And as we wash feet, that's a good thing. But we're not only doing that, we're inviting those that are in our lives, those that we may be mentoring, to serve with us so that they too can learn to serve effectively with Jesus. And next, we learn the rhythm of rest and that balance of finding inner renewal so that we can serve effectively. But most importantly, we discovered that relationship with Jesus is our rest. That's where real rest is. And again, we help our friends and families find rest in Jesus and practice a good balanced lifestyle. And each rhythm is important. But hopefully you notice that all these rhythms work together collectively to make something beautiful and shaping us into Christ's likeness and a fruitful, abundant life. Did you see how the more we grow as disciples of Jesus, that we become disciplers like Jesus? As we pick up his rhythms, those people that we have relationships in our lives are also begin to pick up the rhythms of Jesus through us. And that's what we hope will happen. And so that brings us very naturally to the final rhythm we're going to consider, sending. Sending. Where is Jesus sending you as a disciple? What is he sending you to do in this world, in your sphere of relationships? Jesus is not content that we're becoming devout disciples of him. He sends us out to make more disciples who will in turn make disciples. We're not fully becoming unless we are discipling as he does. You know, when you survey the Gospels, you'll see Jesus' primary tactic was to pour into a handful of disciples very relationally. And he was mentoring them, teaching them, coaching them, training them in these lifestyle rhythms, this way that he did life. And so we've looked at all that, and they began to pick up the rhythms of Jesus as well and pass them along to others. So Jesus trained, and then he sent. In fact, he sent them before they were fully trained. He sent them as they were learning. Sending was a part of the training. So first, he would show them how to live, what to do. And then he would let them participate. And then he gave them responsibility. He sent them out, supervised responsibility. They would return for some debriefing. Then he'd send them again. And that's the way he operated. Before returning to heaven then, Jesus commissioned them to go into the world to spread the rhythms. And they were never on their own, but they were to get out there. They were accompanied by his Spirit, guiding and empowering them as he was with them and working through them. So I want us to try to pick up this rhythm of being sent by considering two sending commissions that Jesus gave in the Gospels. The first one is in John chapter 20, verse 21, where Jesus simply said, "As the Father sent me, I'm sending you." As the Father sent me, now, I'm sending you. This is a very clear, encompassing, life-encompassing directive. If you're a follower of Jesus, you're sent. If you're a disciple, you are sent. You have a mission. The other passage is the well-known Great Commission. It's found in Matthew's Gospel, chapter 28, verses 18 through 20, where it tells us, Jesus came to them, the disciples, and said, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you, and surely I'm with you always to the very end of the age." So there are four beats in this sending rhythm of Jesus. The first beat is go. Go. We're in rhythm when we are going like Jesus. I think the problem is it's easy to fall into all these other rhythms that we've been talking about, the first six, and kind of just get comfortable there. In fact, I think we can easily think that we're doing really well as his disciples if we're living upright, disciplined lives, we're good people. You know, we go to church, we give and pray, we read our Bibles, and we do nice things for other people. We try not to get sucked into worldliness, and we really believe the right things. You know, we believe the right things, and we love Jesus, and we long in our hearts for people to join us, for people to come to church. To come to church. You know, if they would just come. But Jesus teaches us to go. You know, all those things are good, but without a lifestyle that is missionally going, it's like trying to sing a beautiful song and every measure we miss a beat. Do you know how terrible that sounds? I mean, we're out of rhythm. It's awkward. And nobody wants to hear that sound. It's not very pretty. And that's why Jesus commissioned go. He didn't want us to miss that part of being a disciple. It's great when we're excited about the good news and we can't wait to tell someone. You know, we can't keep quiet. We want to tell everybody we know. But the truth is, a lot of us, and many times, we're hesitant to speak up. We need a nudge. We need a directive to go. Get out there. Engage some people. Let some people discover Jesus' rhythms in you. Start a conversation. Get out there. Go. Engage people purposefully. This week, a friend raised a provocative, somewhat exposing question for us. Here's the question. If everyone that you're fervently praying for to become followers of Jesus would suddenly, even today, this very day, if all of them would accept Christ and be baptized, just how many people would that be? I mean, not very many. I think it's kind of exposing. Scores of people within the sphere of our influence, our collective influence in this room, are missing out, even perishing, if we don't give them an opportunity. We've got to go. Jesus said, "As the Father sent me, I'm sending you." Jesus understood the power and the importance of sent. He was sent. He was sent to earth with a life-saving, life-changing mission. He became one of us. He engaged people. He laid down his life for us. He was obedient to his sender and to his mission. He, in turn, then discipled the 12 to do the very same thing he'd been doing. I was sent. Now I'm sending you. All that you've learned from me, I want you to pass on to others, you know. So in the same way that I discipled you. And this message is not just for the 12. It's for us as well. As the Father sent me, I'm sending you. You. Yeah, you. This message is for us. And I wonder if we're living as people who've been sent. People who are living life on mission, that people who are getting out of bed every single day, eager with priority to live out these rhythms and make more disciples. Last week, I was letting this message kind of just brew in my mind, you know, and I'm just letting it go. It goes over and over in my head all week. So I'm looking for the right ways to convey this message. And I happened to be at the library at the time, and I was still in the parking lot, and some thoughts were going through my head. And then suddenly the Spirit convicted me right there. Let me try to explain. My whole life and career revolves around this gospel mission of Jesus, leading people to Jesus, helping people grow up into his likeness and so on. Everywhere I go, every person, every encounter, everything I do, I'm on mission. I don't separate my career and my daily life. That's what I do. And it's not because I get paid to do it. I cannot not do it. You know, so church leadership, ministry, and preaching are my calling, and every day I'm doing ministry for Christ and the church. Every day, that's just what I do. But it occurred to me in that moment, the Spirit convicted me, I need to go more. Go more. And let me try to explain that. For example, I don't work in a non-Christian environment like many of you do every day. You're commonly engaging with unbelievers all the time. And I need to intentionally find some connections outside of the framework of church relationship. I need to find some activities outside of the framework of my ministry responsibilities where I can rub shoulders with people who are yet to believe and begin to build some relationships there where I can disciple. You know, when my kids were younger, that was a whole lot easier. It was more natural with opportunities like sport. They were in sports and dance and scouts and school and neighborhood interactions, you know. And so I found opportunities in those settings. But the Spirit's convicting me now that I need to find some new ways to engage people who are yet to believe. Maybe I need to join a group or maybe I need to join a league or some kind of activity that puts me in close proximity with people where I can live out these rhythms and put them on display and lead people to Jesus. I don't know exactly what all that's going to look like yet. Because it's a new thing for me, and I've got to figure it out. I'm praying that the Spirit will lead me to the right opportunity. And I had confided this with a confidant about what I just related to you. But I decided I needed to tell you, too, for some accountability. But also so that you would pray with me that I can find the right opportunities, the right connections for influence. I also share it with you because, you know, the Spirit may be prompting you to stretch outside your normal routines into new ventures, new relationships, so you can engage people for Jesus. I believe all of us need to go more intentionally. We've got to stop thinking, come to church. We need to go and engage our world and engage people who are different from us, engage people who need the Lord, whatever it is. We've got to get out there. Now, going can be as simple as becoming a regular at the coffee shop where you get to be known. And you build relationships and have dialogues there in the community. Maybe it's finding your voice as a regular at the senior center. or on a bowling team, or coaching a baseball or soccer team or something like that. Maybe it's pitching in to help with the elections, and you build relationships there, and you're talking about important things, and they see how you go about things. Maybe it's joining the PTA, helping a neighbor or something. Maybe it's watching somebody's kids so they can go out and have a date night. Maybe it's being a father figure to a kid who doesn't have one, you know? But what I'm saying is put the six rhythms that we've been talking about into practice in your life so that you can purposefully influence other people that you're connecting with in this world. A friend of mine gave his neighbor a Bible, presented it as a gift, and told his neighbor, "I marked some of my favorite passages for you to consider." And a couple weeks later, that neighbor, who claims to not be a fan of organized religion, you know, he wasn't really interested in this stuff, but he was intrigued, and he asked if my friend would sit down with him sometime and explain these marked passages, what they meant to him, and why they were his favorites. And so, man, that's an open door. That's an opportunity that was initiated by going to the neighbor and handing him this Bible. It's going. It's making those connections. That's what Jesus wants us to do. He wants that just to be the natural rhythm of our life. That's the first beat. The second beat is disciple. Disciple as a verb here. The central command in the Great Commission is disciple. We're to disciple. We're to make disciples. Disciple people everywhere. We're in rhythm when we are discipling like Jesus. Because he showed us how to do this, right? We've been talking about it for several weeks. We can observe his rhythm, his method, and all throughout the Gospels. And it's most effective when we are discipling relationally, life upon like impact, personal influence, personal exchange. You build a relationship and you share. Jesus pointed out that making disciples involves leading people to become followers of Jesus, so that they're saved, they're baptized into Christ. And that's what we call evangelism, sharing the good news. That's what we do. So we build this relationship and we lead a person to faith in Christ. But then discipling goes beyond that. You're not done with making disciples there. We continue to teach them for a lifetime with the aim of all of us becoming more and more like Jesus. Now, there are a lot of discipling methods. You can bring people here to preaching and teaching and worship. You can bring them to Bible studies and training seminars and youth group. But the problem is, our goal is not to make church attenders. That's not what we're after. Our goal is not to merely see people saved, be baptized into Christ. That's not really our only goal. Our goal is to make disciples, followers of Jesus. We do that best relationally, with lots of personal investment, just like Jesus poured into the 12. We invite people to follow the rhythms of Jesus with us as we follow him. So that's why he describes it as go, baptize, teach. You're going to be doing all of that until we reach maturity in Christ. My friend Ed was already a believer. He believed in God and all that. He attended church regularly with his family. The thing was, he just didn't have an avid relationship with Jesus. You know, he was coming to church. He did believe, but that was about it. He was well-liked. In church activities, people were drawn to him. I mean, if he was going to be doing something, a lot of the other young men wanted to participate because of him. And so he had this natural leadership ability. And Brenda and I befriended Ed and his wife, Diana, and we really became good friends. We ate together a lot. We were in each other's homes a lot, you know. I spent a lot of time together. We went to sporting events and other entertainment activities together. Ed and I played golf and ball together, and we just became such close friends. And the more time we spent with each other, I noticed that Ed was becoming more interested in Jesus and his faith and growing and the mission of the church, and his walk with Jesus just began to blossom, and he participated in the leadership training course that I led, and he shined. I mean, he really came, and he became a leader in our very large Bible class for young adults in the church I was in there in Missouri, and he led our church basketball team as a player coach. In fact, he brought some of his old college buddies. They were on the team together in college players, and now he brought them to play on our church team, and he started discipling those guys. And he loved to sit with me at a restaurant, even late into the evening, and we'd just be talking and dreaming about ways to disciple more people, and about new church buildings and mentoring programs and all kinds of ways to advance the gospel. And you know what? After Brenda and I moved from that city to another ministry, many of those dreams that Ed and I talked about around that table have now become reality in a very big, dynamic church there, partly because of Ed's influence. Things that he stimulated and he passed the vision along. I'm just saying, if we follow the rhythm of Jesus in just relational discipling, it works. It's that simple. Jesus did it. He showed us how to do it. We need to disciple like Jesus. The third beat in this rhythm is with. Now, early in this series, we already talked about the power of with, and here it is again. The thing is, I've never discipled anyone effectively without the Lord. Because I'm not discipling anyone to be like me. I'm discipling people to follow Jesus. Jesus is the one I want them to follow. Jesus transforms. Jesus saves. He's the one who enables us. He's the one that we follow and we put on display in our lives. He's the one who's working in people's lives, in your friends' lives. And we get to join with him in what he's doing. You know, and so we're in rhythm when we're discipling with Jesus, not just like Jesus, but with Jesus. He sent us and assured us, I will be with you always. Let me say that we're never closer to Jesus than we are when we're doing what he sent us to do. Never closer than when we're discipling. You want to be close to Jesus? You want to really experience his dynamic presence in your life? You want to become like Jesus? Then go disciple someone. Some of you are wondering, why isn't God real in my life? Why? Get out there and disciple someone. He'll become real. You'll need him. And he'll be there, very much alive, and you'll see him like never before. That's what Jesus said. Go disciple, and I will be with you. We're never more aligned with him than when we're making disciples. We never experience his power and wonder more profoundly than when we're discipling. I don't know if you noticed this or not, but I can get a little fired up when I'm up here. I don't know. I really believe what I'm talking about, and the Spirit moves me and so on. But can I tell you another honest thing about me? When it comes to one-on-one, talking with somebody about their faith and their walk with the Lord. Like if I were to today go try to initiate a conversation with my next door neighbor about that, man, I can come up with all kinds of reasons why now is not a good time to do that. That's what happens in my mind. You know, they're not going to, this isn't a good time, Dan, you know, all kinds of things, all kinds of excuses pop up in my, what, I should go up to my neighbors and suggest we start a neighborhood Bible study, you know, I mean, they're not going to want to do, they're going to hide when they see me coming if that's what I do. So listen, we don't want to turn people off. That's not our objective. So we have to be careful. We need to be sensitive to our relationship that we're building, sensitive to the timing, and tact and opportunity and the Spirit's leading. I get all that. But here's what I want to assure you in. Jesus is with us. And that reduces some of the concerns and fears and uncertainties about talking about faith with people. We may feel awkward. We may feel woefully unprepared. But he's with us. You know? And I don't mean don't prepare, but I'm just saying he is with us. His glory is on display in our weaknesses. He overcomes barriers that we cannot. Sometimes He puts me in the right place at just the right time. Sometimes just the exact words that are needed come to me. And a person responds, in spite of my blundering. It's Him at work. And even when the response is disinterest or even antagonistic, He is enabling us to be steadfast and to bounce off and try again with someone else who's hungry and will pay attention. And so, man, we have got to do this with Him. And so, go. Disciple. With. And the last beat in this rhythm is send. When I was a kid, I was a paper boy. I delivered the Chicago Daily News. The thing is, I didn't live in Chicago. I lived downstate at the time. And so the Chicago Daily News was not a local newspaper like the Cincinnati Enquirer here, where everybody takes it, door after door, you know. My route was spread out all over the place. And so I rode my bike, placing well-tossed newspapers on porches. But the thing about the Chicago Daily News, they wanted more people to take the paper in my community. And so I was conscripted to go door to door occasionally, trying to enroll new subscribers. I hated that. I liked delivering the papers. That was fine. That was a good job, good thing, you know. But I didn't like trying to sell the paper, you know, promote the paper. I didn't especially believe in the product, actually. I just needed the job. But I just hated going, knocking on somebody's door some evening, you know, and intruding and trying to convince these people to take a paper I didn't think they really wanted. You know, you wouldn't want to subscribe to the Chicago Daily News, would you? I didn't say exactly that, but I know that's how I came across, because I just, you know, that doesn't sell papers. But here's my point. I was sent, but I went reluctantly and ineffectively. But folks, there's a lot of other occasions where I went gladly. Well, there are occasions when I was the one honored and chosen to be the spokesperson, to make a presentation, to present the awards, to announce the good news, to share the vision, to preach the gospel. And man, that is a privilege I can get into. Jesus has sent us with the best news ever. Best news ever. Life-saving, life-changing, eternal news. This is something we believe in. This is something we want everyone to have an opportunity to embrace. The gospel is something that we are emboldened and excited about and so on. And we've been entrusted, this great privilege, entrusted with this treasure to share with others. It's an honor to be discipling with Jesus. We don't go reluctantly. But also, I want you to know this. We don't hesitate to send others as we've been sent. We're in rhythm when we send disciplers like Jesus did. The goal and the secret to Jesus' ingenious rhythms that we've been talking about is multiplication. You see that? We teach our friends to obey everything. That includes obeying the commission to disciple, to make disciples who make their... We reproduce disciples. And we understand this concept, this principle. When I was young, my dad showed me how to do a lot of things. And he showed me, you know, and his character, his life and so on is reproduced in me in a lot of ways. One of the things he did is he showed me how to work with some basic tools, and so I could do some things. And then when Caleb was a boy, I showed him how to use some of the tools, you know, and it was hands-on thing. Now Caleb shows me how to use tools, you know. He surpassed me, and he has mastered many tools, and he can teach that to others. And so it's like... Sometimes I've asked Dan Potavin to come over and help me fix something at my house, and he could just easily come in and quickly repair it. He could do it himself. But you know what Dan does? He patiently shows me how to do it. And then he puts tools on my hand. He makes me get my hands dirty. And he watches as I do it. And he might have to smooth out a few rough edges. But now he's taught me to do it. So next time I can do it myself. And I have, because of what I learned from him. And that's the kind of thing we want in discipleship. So that you train someone so that they can turn around and do it too. And they can tell somebody else how to do it. The measure of a church's success and our success as individual disciplers is multiplication. It's not church attendance. It's not how big your church is. That's not the real measure. It's not the number of converts or buildings or staff or your budget or campuses or whatever. It's multiplication. It's second, third, and fourth generations of disciples who disciple others. It's great when you lead someone to Christ. That'll be one of the greatest things you ever do in your life if you've never done that. It is so great. But it's even greater when the person that you led to Christ leads someone else to Christ. You know how powerful that is? What that will mean to you? It's wonderful when you mentor someone in the church, maybe to be a youth leader or a Bible teacher or to help in the nursery. Maybe you mentor them in their stewardship. Their finances were a mess and you mentor them and help them and they become good financial stewards. Or maybe they become a neighbor helper. Maybe they become a great dad because of your mentoring and your influence. And then that's great that they've changed that much. But the greater reward is when that person you've mentored impacts somebody else. And reproduces that in someone else. When a great dad, a person who became a great dad, they teach someone else to be a great dad. And then it just keeps going. That's when we know we're disciplers. From my Christian grandparents, to my parents, to me and all my siblings, to our children, and to the children's children, to my knowledge, all in my family are followers of Jesus, not perfectly, but we're all following Jesus. And many are serving the Lord in leadership ways. And more disciples are being made all around the world. That's the power of discipling and sending. It gradually becomes exponential. It's how we change the world. We don't change the world by getting someone to come to church. We don't change the world by even making a convert. We're here making disciples. If you observe Jesus' rhythms, you can see the way he trained disciples to be sent. And we can just follow that. Praying with them, being with them, eating with them, teaching them, serving with them, resting with them. But then sending them to do the same thing in the lives of others. And here's how Jesus did it. And we can just follow this pattern. Here's a good one for you to remember. I do. You watch. And we talk. Right? That's how it starts. I do. You watch. And then we talk. Then we move it up a little bit. I do. You help. And we talk. But the next time, you do. And I'll help. And then we'll talk. And then you do, and I watch, and we talk. And finally, you do, and someone else watches you, and the two of you talk. And it multiplies. It's exponential. It builds. Jesus said, go make disciples, baptizing and teaching them to obey everything that I taught you, and I'll be with you always. Do you believe that? John 20:21, as the Father sent me, I'm sending you. You can do this. It's what being a disciple is. But he also made another amazing promise in John 14:12, when Jesus said, whoever believes in me will also do the works that I do, and greater works than these will he do. What? Greater than Jesus? How can we do greater works than Jesus? raising the dead, walking on water, multiplying the loaves. Have you done any of that? Have you ever seen anybody? How do we do that? Because he's not talking about doing greater miracles. He's talking about changed lives. He's talking about the multiplication of disciples that would come after he went back to heaven, after his death, burial, and resurrection. We now have the complete gospel, the complete story, and we now have his indwelling spirit in us to help us. He started it all. He initiated it all. He came discipling, but we get to participate in the exponential reproduction of more and more and more disciples who make disciples, who make disciples, who make disciples, who make, and it just keeps growing and growing until he comes. We multiply what he's doing in us, and it's a glorious rhythm that I certainly want to be in step with, don't you? We started this whole series. It's not New Year's resolutions. It's not a bunch of new disciplines. I'm not asking you to win two people to Christ this year or to read your Bible through the course of this year. Read your Bible every day so at the end of the year you've read through the whole Bible. I'm not asking you to lead a small group this year or go on a mission trip. Now you may do those things, and those are good things to do. But following Jesus is not about making and keeping a to-do list that we're going to struggle to keep. It's not a check-the-box thing. It's something that happens inside about who we are as a result of a relationship with Jesus. And then it becomes a part of it. It becomes a lifestyle, a natural rhythm for us. It's about picking up his rhythms and then living them out in our own lives so that other people can pick up the rhythm and they'll pass the rhythm along as well. Rhythms. Are you in rhythm? Can be. It's about that relationship with Jesus, about following him. And I hope you'll pay a lot of careful attention to the rhythms of Jesus and try to make that come alive in your life. Try to make him come alive in your life. Maybe you need to start today by giving your life to Jesus and being baptized into Christ, and he'll come and dwell inside you and help you walk the walk. And so if you'd like the forgiveness of sins and a new start with Jesus today, just come on up here and meet me in the front. It's possible that you're already a baptized believer, an immersed believer in Jesus Christ, and you want to become a part of the church family. We'd love to have you. Just let's make that known today as well. We meet around the Lord's table, and I like the Lord's table because it reminds us, it's a reminder of the rhythms. It reminds us of the rhythms. And we think of him, we focus on him, we engage with him. And so if you'd like to participate in the Lord's Supper today, think about his rhythms and yours. The tables are set up in the four corners of the room. You can participate as you're ready.